Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our ASAF meeting. I'm going to start chairing the meeting this morning. Hans will join us a little later in the morning. Before I hand over to the staff to start the first session on business combinations under common control, firstly, can I remind people to mute? There's quite a bit of noise coming through. What I was going to say was not please mute, but rather to welcome somebody who hasn't been at the ASAF table before, and that's Pauline Wallace. Many of us know Pauline. She's been part of the IFRS family in different ways over her career, but at, her role now is to be chair of the new UK endorsement board, and so she's joining ASAF in that capacity. So welcome, Pauline. Very nice to have you with us. Even if it's only virtually.
Thank you. I'm really delighted to be here. I'm looking forward to this.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to hand over to Yulia. Are you going to kick off the business combinations under common control presentation?
Yes, Sue. Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. If we could get the slides on the screen, hopefully you can all see them now. Welcome to Business Combinations Under Common Control discussion. It's been a while since we last talked to you about this topic. So the main purpose of today's discussion is to obtain your initial feedback on the discussion paper on business combinations under common control. We will also take this opportunity to share with you the initial feedback that we have been hearing in our outreach activities. We have some specific questions for you to discuss after each of the main topics today, but these questions are there just to provide structure for the discussion, and we really would welcome any comments that you have for us at this stage. And the topics for today's discussions are which method to apply to business combinations under common control, how to apply the acquisition method for such transactions, and how to apply a book value method. We will keep our introductions very quick to allow maximum time for discussion. If we can go to the next slide. And the next one, thank you. So as you all know, business combinations under common control are scoped out from IFRS 3, and there is diversity in practice today. And the board's objective in this project really is to ensure useful information about business combinations under common control for users of financial statements, but without imposing unnecessary costs on preparers. In this project, as you all know, we focus on reporting by the receiving company in a business combination under common control. On the diagram on the slide, the receiving company is company A. And specifically, we are focusing on information needs of users of receiving company financial statements, its non-controlling shareholders, its potential shareholders, and its lenders and other creditors. We do not focus on information needs of the controlling party, company P, in the diagram on the slide. And this is because, first of all, the controlling party controls the receiving company, has the power to direct its activities, and has access to the information it needs. So, for example, controlling party will have access to information for preparing its own consolidated financial statements. And also, nothing really happens at the controlling party level. At the controlling party level, it's an intercompany transaction that gets eliminated. With that brief introduction, if we move to the first topic of our discussion, and this is which method to apply to business combinations under common control. So the board has concluded that one size does not fit all business combinations under common control, and that both the acquisition method and a book value method are appropriate in particular circumstances. So in principle, the board believes that the acquisition method should apply when non-controlling shareholders in the receiving company are affected by the transaction. However, this is subject to the cost-benefit trade-off, and in all other cases, a book value method should apply. We go to the next slide. So you are probably all familiar with this diagram, and I'm not going to go through it in a lot of detail. So just to remind you that the underlying principle in the discussion paper is, does the transaction affect non-controlling shareholders of the receiving company? And in principle, if it does, the acquisition method would apply, subject to the cost-benefit trade-off. And the board has concluded that the cost-benefit trade-off would be met if the receiving company's shares are traded in a public market. And this is because due to public market regulations, non-controlling interest in this case is likely to be substantive and significant. However, there is an exception and an exemption for private companies. And what I would like to highlight here is that all the conditions presented on this slide are based on existing conditions in IFRS standards. And now very briefly, what we have been hearing so far on the board's proposed approach. So some stakeholders agree with the board's preliminary view and agree for the reasons set out in the discussion paper. There are some stakeholders who agree with the board's approach directionally, but have questions and comments on particular aspects of the model. So, for example, some stakeholders believe that the acquisition method should also apply when the receiving company has public debt. Some stakeholders believe that the focus on non-controlling shareholders is appropriate. However, other facts and circumstances should also be considered in assessing the nature of the transaction. So, for example, that they suggest that where the transaction takes price at fair value should also be considered in selecting the appropriate accounting treatment. Some stakeholders question whether the related party exception is appropriate, and they argue that related parties of the receiving company may also need fair value information. Some stakeholders question whether exemption from the acquisition method is operational and also whether it is an effective way to take into account cost-benefit trade-off. They point out that it would be enough for one non-controlling shareholder to object to trigger the acquisition method, and they question whether it is appropriate or whether some kind of significance threshold should be added to the proposed exemption. And finally, some stakeholders take a very different view on when the acquisition method and a book value method should apply. So, for example, some stakeholders believe that a book value method should be applied in all cases to business combinations under common control. And in contrast, some other stakeholders would like to see much more fair value information. For example, they argue that in all pre-IPO scenarios, fair value information should be provided. And what we have noted so far, that those views often tend to be informed by the current practice in a particular jurisdiction. And with that, I open the floor for discussion, and we are interested in your initial views on the scope of the project, what type of scenarios do you tend to see in practice, and also your views on which method should apply and when. Thank you.
Okay, so a request to focus on this set of questions first. It's to do with scope and which method applies when. Chiara.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you. So I wanted to share some initial reactions of our consultative forum of standard setters on which type of business combinations are mostly common. We see some jurisdictions focusing on the fact that these transactions are relevant for the separate financial statements, so they would like more focus on the separate. Others also would like to consider the group restructuring with the creation of a new co, so done immediately before a change of control, and to see the economic substance of the transaction also considered when deciding the approach to be taken. As for the reasons for taking the transactions, we have heard for tax reasons, to reduce costs, to reorganize segments, and to simplify the group structures. Some also has noted that the discussion paper does not expressly consider how to identify the accounting acquirer, and they would like to have some guidance on that. In our draft comment letter, we also comment that other common control transactions, for example, transfer of group of assets that that do not meet the definition of a business are also important. As for the trade-off between acquisition method and cost method, we support the application of the acquisition method where there are non-controlling shareholders in the receiving company. But we are also considering to propose to, and we are seeking views from constituents on a possible change, reversing the step one and step two of your decision tree. And we are also consulting whether the scope should be broader to consider debt, as Julia was saying, debt, traded debt, but also, in general, entities with public accountability. As for views from the consultative forum of standard setters, the majority of those that provided view support our suggestions for the modifications to the decision tree. We've also heard doubts on whether the presence of non-controlling shareholders is sufficient in all cases, and also some doubt about how to interpret affect non-controlling shareholders. For your question three, privately held companies. In our draft comment letter, we are consulting our constituents on whether the related party exception should be optional rather than required. I need to tell you that from the reactions of the consultative forum of standard setters, we see some support for this idea of having the optional treatment also here. And this is all from my side.
Thank you very much, Chiara. Can I... the points that you made, which is on the public debt. So the proposals in the exposure draft don't... Sorry, Chiara, can I ask you a question on public debt? So yeah. The proposals in the exposure draft don't focus so much on, you know, sort of whether it's publicly accountable or not, but rather what information the particular users need, and the sort of logic behind focusing on non-controlling shareholders, as I remember it, was to do with the fact that because debt investors tend to be interested in whether they'll recover enough to, you know, cover their direct claim, that whether you had book value method or sort of fair value based information didn't matter so much. And so from a cost benefit perspective, we decided to focus on sort of equity and being the ones who really needed the fair value acquisition type information. Does that mean that the people that you're talking to disagree with that information need?
Not necessarily, but from talking to users in our user group, they considered also that having traded public debt would be also would create another group of possible users interested in having that information. So that was the point.
Okay, thank you. Linda.
Thank you very much. I'd like to make a few general comments before I answer the specific questions. And so first of all, where we are in our outreach, our board is still deliberating the outreach. So these are very preliminary views. And so we will continue to discuss it further. The outreach we've conducted thus far, first of all, we focused on getting some feedback from users of financial statements. We also talked to our IFRS discussion group. We did have a discussion with our securities regulators, and we have an ongoing forum on our website where people can comment as they wish. From a contextual perspective, I think it's important to understand that here in Canada, we have no reporting requirement for subsidiaries, separate financial statements. And so it makes this subject slightly different from an importance perspective. And in fact, we have had some difficulty in getting feedback on this particular proposal, given other things that are in play. That said, I would say that the vast majority of transactions here in Canada are tax motivated. So you have a subsidiary that's profitable, you have another subsidiary that has some tax losses, and you combine them for tax purposes. And then the other specific reason that this may occur would be internal reorganizations. So I'll just also give that context as well. And so any financial statements done in that setting may or may not be on IFRS. They may be on some sort of basis that is needed for the tax authorities, that sort of thing. So I just wanted to mention that context. One of the specific feedback we had from our discussions is that the single criterion of non-controlling shareholders may be too limiting. And so even if you intend it to be broader, maybe some additional language would be helpful. And the specific example that we were given was that non-controlling shareholders could also be related parties and or employees. And so you should consider those circumstances and how you do you, in fact, if there's an employee agreement, does that kick it into the acquisition method? When in that case, the fair value information may not actually be helpful. Also, the notion, it's similar to what Kiara was talking about, the notion of shares traded in the public market. We did get comments, if you were only trading debt, would that kick you into the acquisition method when, in fact, maybe it's not necessary per the earlier discussion? So some additional clarity on that. But then another topic came up over participating policyholders in an insurance company. They're not shareholders, but they do get rolled up into a mutual company structure. And so it's an interesting question in terms of whether or not you meant the acquisition method to apply in that setting. And the last general comment I'll make is we're getting a lot of pushback on no ability to restate comparatives in the book value method. And in specific, we understand that you're doing it from a cost-benefit perspective, but ultimately, if the entity is intending to go public in the future and they would like to have the option of doing restated comparatives, we think there should at least be an option available for restating the comparative. So just to generally answer the questions, then we agree that one method should not apply for all transactions. And we also agree with the related party exception and the optional exemption. But I think I've covered the rest of the questions in my introductory comment, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Linda. Thoughts on?
Thank you. So good morning to everybody. So as a forward, I wanted to say that we're still working on the letter and that I will share with you preliminary views at this stage and that we expect to publish our final comment letter by the end of July. So with regard to the three questions that were asked on this slide, for question one, I confirmed to you what I said some months ago about the fact that business combinations of common control are not widespread in financial statements prepared in accordance with IFRS standards, at least in France. We have noted that such transactions are clearly pretty rare on the public markets, and when such transactions occur, they are mostly carried out in the context of IPOs. We suspect that those transactions might be more prevalent on non-public markets, but as those entities are not subject to public scrutiny, it's quite to assess the prevalence of those transactions. However, those transactions might be rare in practice, but when they do arise, they have significant impact on the group's financial statement. And we agree with the fact that some standard setting should be undertaken in this respect. I wanted to complete the input on that question by mentioning that financial institutions in our jurisdiction come across such kind of transaction more frequently than other transactions. And this is because the subsidiaries of financial statement, they usually prepare IFRS financial statement. And those groups regularly enter M&A transactions that are driven by prudential consideration, for instance, because they want to optimize their equity. And accordingly, so that's why the input of financial institutions is quite important in our working group, because they quite come across such kind of transaction regularly. So that was for question one. For question two, I think that we have still mixed views on this question, but actually I think that there is one thing that is clear at this stage is that our stakeholders do not agree with the principle that is set out in the discussion paper, that the acquisition method should apply to all combination that affects non-controlling shareholders, except when there is a negative cost balance. In fact, we are reading that you work on the assumption with the assumption that basically those transactions were fundamentally business combination, and accordingly that the acquisition method should be the accounting anchor. However, we think that the fact that those transactions are, of course, they are business combination, but they are also happening in very specific circumstances. That is that there are all the entities involved under the control of the same entity. And we have the feeling that this point has not really investigated further in the discussion. And it is clear that for all of our stakeholders, they don't really see the extent to which the presence or the absence of non-controlling shareholders would change the substance of the would be a good starting point for the accounting, and they don't really see to which extent it is reflective of the substance of the transaction, and accordingly they have doubt about whether it's the right starting point. Having said that, there is a clear consensus to disagree with the approach that is in the ED, but however, we have still mixed views among the stakeholders. We have clearly, on the one side, a strong push from operators to support the book value method, mostly for cost-benefit reasons, and also applying the fact that the US GAAP are quite prescriptive in this respect and require the use of the book value method. And on the other hand, we have other stakeholders who think that, okay, acknowledging the fact that, well, there is no one-size-fits-all solution for all business combinations of common control, and that the accounting should be primarily driven by the substance of the transaction. But those stakeholders think that assessing whether non-controlling interests or shareholders are involved in the transaction, they don't really think that this criterion is reflective of the transaction. So quite mixed views about what the overall approach should be. With regard to the decision tree, just to mention the fact that the first box, we appreciate the fact that this is still a discussion paper, and a lot of words still need to be refined and so on. But it was quite obvious that when assessing the words in this first box, actually we assemble on all words in this box. So the first question that came up is why the board is using the terminology non-controlling shareholders, why usually we have non-controlling interest. We have also had a lot of questions about what does a transaction that affects non-controlling shareholders mean in practice. So we guess what the meaning was when reading the discussion paper as a whole, but there are still a lot of questions, but there is still much uncertainty about among some stakeholders about what the board's intention was in this respect. And the last question of was about what is also the receiving end company. Is this the legal acquirer, or is this the acquirer with the meaning as set out in IFRS 3? A lot of questions about that, and also a lot of practical challenge that we will try to illustrate in our comment letter so as to be as helpful as possible, just to help you understand that the decision tree might be tricky to apply when you have subgroups and potential several receiving entities, and we still have a lot of questions about that. So we'll try to flag those questions to help you think those things through. So that was all for question two. And for question three, actually, basically, if we assume that we would agree with your decision tree, we would agree with the proposed exemption and exceptions that are set out, because we think that the rationale that supporting those exemption are quite relevant. Thank you.
Thank you, Vincent. Are you?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Sue. First of all, we appreciate the efforts made by the ISB to move the project forward. As we know that the BCUCC occurs very frequently in China, so we paid a lot of importance on this project. So far, we had a series of outreach with different stakeholders, including preparers, users, auditors, some regulators, and some academy. We also had the joint outreach with the ISB. We will continue our outreach before the deadline of the exposure draft. We have some comments on the three questions. First one, in China, the BCUCC occurs frequently in both listed companies and non-listed companies. The main purpose of this kind of business combination in China is to achieve the group restructuring or resource allocation, reallocation, organize the management structure or optimize the industry structure, and so on. That's our preliminary comments on question one. On question two, currently we support that a book value method should apply to all BCUCC, this kind of combination. There are four main reasons. First reason, regarding the economic substance, people think that BCUCC is a kind of group restructuring or resource reallocation rather than a purchase in substance. So BCUCC, the accounting method for BCUCC should be different from the business combination, not under common control. The existence of non-controlling shareholders may affect the pricing method and the transaction price of BCUCC. However, we think this is not a determinative factor when making judgment on the economic substance of these transactions. Considering the size and the dispersion of non-controlling interest, the influential power of non-controlling shareholder on BCUCC is quite limited. Therefore, the BCUCC are mainly dominated by the controlling parties. That's the first reason. The second reason, in practice, since 2007, China has been using the book value method for all BCUCC. And generally, it has been well implemented nationwide. We think the information provided using the book value method can basically satisfy the information needs of non-controlling shareholders, lenders, and other creditors, and as well as the controlling parties and other information users. A few users requested entity to adopt the acquisition method for BCUCC. And based on our recent outreach, non-controlling shareholders do not show a strong preference for accounting information provided by the acquisition method. That's the second reason. The third reason, people think the book value method is simple and easy to apply in practice. And people also have some concerns about the acquisition method, because it needs valuation, and the subsequent measurement of goodwill involve a lot of judgment and estimates. This may have a negative impact on the financial performance of entities. In addition, people are afraid that the acquisition method may bring difficulty in accounting, may increase the cost of preparation of the financial statement. That's our third reason. The last reason, in some of the BCUCC, sometimes it's difficult to identify the acquirer or the ultimate controlling parties. It's difficult to identify the acquirer. And sometimes the ultimate controlling party are able to or have the motivation to select the acquirer. If the acquisition method is applied, different acquirers identified may lead to different accounting results. So people have some concerns in this regard. I will not go details. Some examples have been shared with the ISB staff during the joint outreach recently. That's our comments on question two. Lastly, a very quick comment on question three. Our preliminary view is that in applying the optional exemption as proposed by the exposure draft, maybe the general meeting of shareholders may be needed. Some people think that would bring a relative high cost, and maybe sometimes it's hard to implement in practice. That's our comments so far. Thank you.
Thank you. Pauline.
Thank you. I should say, like others, this is a preliminary view because we are currently consulting. We put our draft comment letter out on our website and are seeking comments at the moment from stakeholders on this. So the board's only had one discussion and plans to have another discussion in July once we've got the feedback from our constituents. Having said that, it's fair to say it's not been a major issue from a UK perspective. So I don't think this is a subject which has engaged our UK stakeholders as much as others. I think that's largely because in the UK, as it sounds to me, it is in Canada, most of these transactions are between unlisted entities, including subsidiaries of listed companies, but are rarely carried out at the listed company level. Usually they're carried out for regulatory reasons or to streamline group structures. And typically they're fairly straightforward transactions. I think we would largely agree with the approach that's taken in the proposals. We do agree that where non-controlling shareholders are affected, this is closer to business combination accounting in nature, and therefore that acquisition accounting should be applied. And we agree that for pragmatic reasons, it's appropriate to use book value accounting in other situations. Having said that, we do think it's probably appropriate for companies who are otherwise able to take advantage of book value accounting to be able to sort of opt up, if you like, to acquisition accounting. That's one of the areas we're consulting on with stakeholders at the moment. As far as the exemptions are concerned, we agree with the exemptions, but we do wonder whether the optional exemption from the acquisition method should also be extended to the related party exception. This would give related parties the option to require acquisition accounting if they felt that was appropriate. And we also think it might simplify the standard if that approach was introduced. I think that's everything I wanted to say on those particular questions.
Thank you. EH?
Well, thank you, Sue. We will definitely conduct the outreach, but we'll just let you know a couple of comments we have. We are in support of the conclusion of discussion paper, adoption of book value method, but we believe the conclusion of this paper could be presented in a little bit different way, I would say in a much easier way for the comprehension. If I summarize the conclusion of this discussion paper, the one is that there are different types of BCUCC in connection with, I would say, different composition of shareholders. And number two, the depending upon the composition of shareholders, either acquisition method or book value method will be used. Number three, book value methods are used in a very, very, very limited situation. The limited situation includes there is no non-controlling shareholders, or all NCSs are related parties, or all non-controlling shareholders agree to use book value method. And if this is the case, the explanation could be a little bit different, much more simplified. So the decision tree, prepared a different version of decision tree. I don't know whether you will be able to take a look at it, but it's much simpler. We have a business combination and we have BCUCC. But I would say in most cases, including BCUCC, the transaction will be, it could be using acquisition method. The only exception is where there is no NCS, or all NCSs are related parties, or all NCSs agree to use
Jasmine, what if you help me? I got your name from Christina Bestel. In regards to my dog, I'm looking for the UK.
Bruce, you're not on mute. Bruce.
Oh, fantastic.
Bruce.
In August.
Bruce.
I would like
sorry,
to
EH.
Okay.
Can somebody message Bruce, please?
All right. Can I continue?
Okay. EH, yes. Sorry about that.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that everything fine, but I thought for the benefit of preparers who will face this new standard, I thought we better have a much simpler decision tree and explanation. And obviously I send it over to ISB for your convenience. So that's one comment. And I don't like to answer for every single questions, but one thing is that if we look at the practices in Korea before this discussion paper, book value method has been very much prevailing. We didn't really find out any instances where acquisition method has been using. So if there is a new standard coming out, then there will be a substantial change in the practice in Korean preparers. So we will continue anyway the outreach in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, EH. We couldn't see your flow chart very well. If you could share it, that would be great. But are you saying that the outcomes are the same, but it just is simpler to follow?
Yes, that's true.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. That's useful. I'm sure the staff would like to have that. Thank you. Nobu, I think you're next.
Okay, thank you, Sue. Our preliminary view is that all BCUCC should apply the same method, and our preliminary preference is to apply the book value method. We continue to believe that the controlling entity is a very important primary user. So we disagree with the ISP's position that they should be ignored. And we are not convinced that the accounting should change due to the preferences of the non-controlling shareholders. Thank you.
Thank you, Nobu. Iki?
Thank you, Sue. I would like to highlight that the AOSSG members are still in the process of collecting feedback from stakeholders, and so the feedback I provided today represent the preliminary views of AOSSG members who responded. So in response to the first question, AOSSG members note that the common reasons for undertaking BCUCC are preparing for an IPO, for test purpose, and also to streamline the operation. AOSSG members also note that BCUCC are common among both listed and private companies. In response to the second question, majority of the AOSSG members who responded largely agreed or partially agree with the overall direction on the selections of measurement method in DP, and with three main comments and recommendations. The first one is about the information needs of potential investors and also holders of equity-like instruments that are not classified as equity under IAS 32. They note that these instruments are common among private and pre-IPO cases, and they wonder whether their information needs should be also the same as NCS. The second comment is about the significance of NCS interest in the receiving company. Some AOSSG members note that when there is only insignificant NCS, their influence on setting the transaction price and the impact on of the BCUCC on these eight NCS is insignificant. And in those cases, the BCUCC may be different from a business combination under IFRS 3, and also the cost of applying the acquisition method may not justify its benefit in these cases. The third comment is about the substance of the transaction. Some AOSSG members consider that the substance of the transaction should also be taken into account when determining the measurement method, for example, whether the transaction is conducted at fair value. One AOSSG member considered that a book value method should be applied to all BCUCC, mainly because the economic substance of the BCUCC may be different from that of a business combination between unrelated parties. The existence of NCS is not a determinative factor when making judgment on the economic substance of BCUCC. And also in this jurisdiction, the inferential power of NCS on BCUCC is quite limited. BCUCC are mainly influenced or directed by the controlling parties. In response to the third question about the related party exception and also the optional exemption, I would say that the AOSSG members expressed mixed view on these areas. Some agree with the concept or the rationale of providing related party exception and the optional exemption. However, some consider that for related party exception, they note that in some cases, it would be difficult to determine related parties under IAS 24. And also, they note that some related parties may not have access to the internal information of the receiving company. And so in those cases, their information needs would be the same as the NCS. Some AOSSG members suggested that to remove the related party exception so that the related parties can also apply the optional exemption. In response to the optional exemption, some AOSSG members expressed concerns about the practical challenges of implementing this optional exemption. For example, they considered that the NCS may not have the knowledge and competency to understand the impact of applying the different measurement methods. And also the optional exemption is applied on transaction by transaction basis and therefore could result in inconsistency accounting for similar BCUCC. Thank you.
Thank you. Leonardo?
Yes, thank you, Sue. As all the others, we are still discussing the proposal and the discussion paper with our stakeholders. So today I will express only our preliminary views. I can say that so far we broadly agree with the SB proposal. Our main concern relates to the separate financial statements, because in Italy many subsidiaries of listed company prepare separate financial statements according to IFRS. Our problem is that the proposal and the DP apply to the separate financial statement of the receiving company only if the business combination under common control involves the transfer of an unincorporated business. However, the DP is not addressing how a receiving company should report in separate financial statement an investment in a subsidiary received in a business combination under common control. The discussion paper states that this topic is addressed by IAS 27. We do not support this statement because we don't see a substantial difference between a transfer of an unincorporated business and the transfer of a business incorporated in a legal entity. So in our view, these two transactions should be accounted for in the same way. Regarding question three on the optional exemption, as mentioned by others, we have some concern about how this exemption would work in practice. For example, how and when the company should notify its non-controlling shareholders. Another comment that we have, and that is also, I heard this comment by other members, we think that the SB should clarify also who the receiving company is, who is the acquirer. These so far are our main comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Leonardo. Raymond?
Thank you, Sue. I think from our part of the world, what we see is that we've got a mix of the different types of business combinations under common control that are undertaken. Well, I guess the reason why they're undertaken as well is that you'll find them in listed space, the unlisted space. We find that the reasons why they're undertaken in a lot of cases is for tax purposes. Sometimes it's also around group reorganizations, is that we've had situations where some companies, some groups of companies were established previously in very convoluted structures. And in trying to simplify these structures, they've had to find some way of doing that and accounting for that simplification. And in a lot of cases, depending on where they have got minority interests or non-controlling interests in their groups, some companies have gone with I've gone with the acquisition method. Other companies have simply gone with the book value method. So there's varied approaches in terms of how how companies have been applying this. And I think to try and provide some consistency, we will be very much in support of the thought process that has been followed so far in putting this this document together. But while I say that, this is still a preliminary review at this point in time because we're still waiting to get some feedback from other participants on this particular paper. And I think once those come in, we'll certainly let you have some views on that. When I look at the second question, do we agree with the acquisition method to that affect non-controlling shareholders? I think that's effectively, I think, where the concern is that where you've got transactions that affect non-controlling shareholders, then those must be shown at, or the views that have come out is that those must be shown at their fair value to reflect the substance of the transaction. Whereas if it's simply a reorganization between wholly owned subsidiary companies or where there's related parties that are involved, that is not so much of a concern. So when we get to question three, we would agree with the exceptions that are provided for in the approach that has been put forward, and the optional exemption as well that is provided for the use of the acquisition method when should companies deem that to be necessary, but obviously with the necessary disclosures made in the financial statements to explain exactly what their position is. So in general, I think we are in support at the moment with what we're seeing in the paper. Thank you.
Thank you, Raymond. Jim?
Yeah, thank you. I don't think the reasons for business combinations under common control are any different in the U.S. than that which we've already heard. Tax purposes, reorganize a group, And then with some degree of frequency, either roll up or put together of pieces of a business for preparation of taking that entity public, particularly with involvement of private equity. So I think a lot of the same reasons. Yulia, you said up front that oftentimes the perspectives you've heard have been at least influenced by how GAAP is applied in a local jurisdiction. In the U.S., business combinations under common control are accounted for at book value or very similar to our historical pooling guidance, and that's how they continue to be accounted for. I think in part reflecting that the two entities to the transaction, at least when there is no non-controlling shareholders, those two parties really aren't the entities negotiating the transaction. It's the parent. You could argue it's really not sub A and sub B who get to put together that design the terms or negotiate the transaction. It really is the parent on behalf of those. And in many cases, simply is just a reorganizing or a reshuffling of the deck that we've viewed as not giving accounting recognition to the two parties who are the two entities who aren't really negotiating the transaction. They're just being, again, reshuffled. I guess the presence of a non-controlling shareholder, I could argue, does that give you sufficient basis to argue or to require fair value accounting? At least in a mixed attribute model that we have in the U.S., it's not always clear that assigning a purchase price, again, that neither of the entities necessarily negotiated, and then using that as a starting basis for book value accounting or amortized cost accounting going forward gives users any better information than putting those two entities together using their historical book values. In fact, in many cases, users then try to eliminate the purchase accounting adjustments for purposes of modeling going forward. And the real benefit of that purchase accounting is sort of getting accountability for management's decision to enter into the transactions, which is perhaps, again, different in a business combination under common control, where neither management of sub A or sub B may have anything to do with the purpose or transaction price. It's really parties that control them that designed and entered into that transaction. Perhaps reflective of the fact that when you do a business combination under common control without non-controlling shareholders, but for purposes of raising additional capital in the public markets, those transactions, I think even under this proposal, are not proposed to be stepped up. Yet those users would seemingly have the same needs as non-controlling shareholder users and presumably would get information to do that by using historical book values and modeling on that basis. But that does bring up one point in the U.S. that we've found very useful to users, and that is the preparation of predecessor or combined financial statements for the prior year. One, we treat the transaction as if it occurred as of the beginning of the year, so you get a full year, or the beginning of the period, you get a full year's results of the combined entities. And then for the predecessor year or the previous year, we do require the provision of combined financial statements for that period as well.
Thank you very much, Jim. Rodrigo.
Thank you, sir. The most common business combination under common control in our jurisdictions is combination undertaken subsidiary companies from a same conglomerate. It is not common involve the leader company, the controlling individual company, which is responsible for share issue and where we can find the non-controlling shareholders. It's not common involved in a business combination under common control. And the main reason for such combinations between subsidiaries is tax planning. And in our opinion, the book value method should be applied for this kind of combination. Question two, we agree that acquisition method should be applied to combination that affect non-controlling shareholders, and we recommend no exception for privately held companies. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was a good discussion, and as we expected, that sort of taken the majority of the time in this session, which is, I think, going according to plan based on my discussions with the staff. I was just going to make a couple of quick comments, and then Yulia or others, please chip in if there's something extra that you wanted to say. So firstly, I think that what we heard today is a real range of views, but fairly consistent with my understanding of what we've heard from the outreach so far, which is comforting and good, all useful input. Just a couple of things. There were some questions about the wording we'd used and some questions about separate versus consolidated financial statements. Yulia and Richard, if I could encourage you to reach out offline to the people who raised those questions so we can just make sure that we've got a common understanding as a basis for the comment letters, I think that would be helpful. The only other thing I was going to say is that a few people mentioned substance, and you might remember even from the ASAF meetings in the past, we had quite a few discussions about whether or not a business combination has substance and different views on when they were considered to have substance, and there was differences of opinion about where people would draw the line. So I guess just as substance in your responses, the more specific that we have underlying the is really that getting control of a business that you didn't have control of before from the receiving entity's perspective is prima facie something of substance. And so that's the sort of idea we've built on. But if there's disagreement on that, I think specific comments on that would probably be helpful. And of course, as always, we always love to hear what our users think. So the more you can help us with that, the better. Can I hand back to Yulia and Richard? And if you've got anything to add before you move to the next session, please do so as well.
Thank you, Sue. I don't have anything to add. I think you broke up slightly there, but I think we heard a lot of your point that for substance, it would be useful to know what is meant by substance. And obviously for the receiving entity, the discussion paper thinks there always is substance, just for those who may not have caught all of Sue's comment there. The next two sections, I will skip the slides that recap the discussion paper. I'm just conscious that we don't have a long time left, but just quickly to give you an overview of the initial feedback that we have heard so far. In terms of the acquisition method on slide 12, in the acquisition method, there are three main components to the board's view: what to do with distributions, what to do with contributions, and disclosure. We haven't heard a lot of disagreement for the board's views on distributions or disclosure, but how to account for contributions is the area that we are hearing the most about. So some stakeholders, as the DP explains, agree that any underpayment should be recognised as a contribution to equity, whereas others think it should be recognised as a gain in P&L as required in IFRS 3 for a regular business combination. And one of the comments we hear here is a lack of symmetry in how the acquisition method would be applied. So not recognizing a distribution, but recognizing a contribution. But when you think about the board's view, it's actually just following the mechanics that exist in IFRS 3. So IFRS 3 for a regular business combination doesn't require entities to identify, measure, and recognize any overpayment. But it does require them to recognize underpayments in P&L as a gain. So the discussion paper uses the same logic with just the difference that it thinks the nature of the underpayment is not a gain, but it's a contribution, and it should be recognized in equity. I'll probably skip ahead to the next section and then we can discuss them both together just because it might make it slightly quicker. So I will skip forward to the book value method and the common comments there as well. The first area that we're hearing comments on the book value method is which book values to use to measure the assets and liabilities received. So again, some stakeholders agree with the board's preliminary view, which is the transferred company's values. Some stakeholders think that depending on the circumstances, different book values might provide more useful information. So one example we hear is if a transferred company has been recently acquired in an external combination, and then is moved around the group, that maybe those values would be more useful. So the controlling party's book values. And then some stakeholders suggest that the controlling party's book value should be used in all cases. This is particularly common for the stakeholders who suggest using a book value method in all cases because of the controlling party's role in the transactions. And the final area we'd like to share feedback with you is pre-combination information. So some stakeholders agree with the board's view for the reasons that are stated in the discussion paper, which is a prospective approach, the same as what happens under the acquisition method today. Some stakeholders think the pre-combination information should be required, but only in the notes, not the primary financial statements. And finally, some stakeholders support a retrospective approach in the primary financial statements, at least in some cases, which we've particularly heard that could be in a pre-IPO case, which I know a few of you have commented on already. I realise that was a fairly quick run through, and we are going to cover both acquisition method and book value method together. We'll probably put the book value method questions on slide just because I think there are more of them, and hand it back to you, Z.
Thank you very much, Richard. Who would like to come in? I lost connection for a little while, so if I miss anybody, please let me know. Kiara.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Sue. We agree on the distribution, but on the contribution, we have an open question in our draft comments letter to see where our constituents are. And initial views from members of the consultative forum say that the majority of those who participated to the meeting supported the ISB proposal. But there was also a minority asking to have IFRS 3 applied consistently. We supported the disclosure requirements. And as for the book value, whether to use the value of the transferred company or the value of the ultimate parent, we still don't have a view in a draft comment letter we are consulting because we see different merits in both the approaches. The majority of the members of the consultative forum on standard setting that participated to the meeting would support the use of the ultimate parent company value. But I need to tell you that there is also a minority with at least a couple of jurisdictions preferring the transferred company's value because this is consistent with the current practice. As for the pre-combination information, we tentatively agree with the ISB in the draft comment letter, but we see split views from members of the consultative forum on standard setter, and some of them also suggesting to provide an option to allow either prospective or retrospective application, because we understand this is required. The book value method is required by the regulators. It's required in this case to prepare the retrospective information. And that's it from my side.
Thanks, Kiara. Vincent?
Yes, thank you. So I will start with the question on slide 13. For question 4, we agree with the proposed accounting for other payments for the reasons that are set out in the discussion paper, and basically we have nothing else to add to the rationale that were pointed out in the paper. With regard to question 5, in this case, we tend to disagree with your preliminary view about how to account for the bargaining purchase and the so-called underpayment. Well, because from a very genuine accounting point of view, any difference between the consideration paid and the fair value of assets acquired and liability assumed, of course, that difference might include an underpayment that should be effectively presented in equity. Having said that, we think that there are other bits in this difference, and those, for instance, the fact that you could have made a good deal, and accordingly that you could recognize a bargain gain. And also the fact that you have, for instance, the circumstances in which you have assets or liabilities that cannot be recognized in the acquiree financial statement. For instance, you know that you will incur some restructuring and according, but the problem is that you cannot recognize any provision in the financial statement because you don't meet the recognition criteria in IAS 37. And so in that case, there is a difference that is related to the fact that you have not recognized some items. You have also to remind the fact that IFRS 3 also specifies some measurement exemption that results in circumstances in which your assets and liabilities are not measured at fair value when undertaking the acquisition. So we see that difference not as being an underpayment as a whole, but as something that includes several bits. And on balance, as we think that the circumstances in which there would be a transfer of wealth from the controlling to the non-controlling entity are, as we think that those circumstances would be rare in practice, we think that the better accounting would be to reflect that in the difference in profit or loss. And we think this is also consistent with what you have at the moment in IFRS 3. And we still struggle, but could hear what the staff said about that to understand why there is such an asymmetry between the overpayment and the underpayment stuff in the payment. With regard to question six, we support the fact that basically if you are applying the acquisition method, you should also provide the disclosure that are specified in IFRS 3. That being said, we are pretty consistent with what we wrote in one of our past comment letters about the disclosure, about the subsequent performance of the acquired entity in the context of the goodwill and impairment project, and we have strong reservation about those disclosures. And well, we take the opportunity to reiterate the fact that we would also have strong reservation to require entity to provide such disclosure, at least as currently proposed in the goodwill and impairment discussion paper. This is our sole reservation. Moving now to the questions that are on page 18 of the presentation. On question seven about what should be the book value, we don't have any strong view in this respect, and we appreciate the pros and cons of each method. Having said that, on balance, I think that we would support using the controlling party book value. Well, first, because we think that they reflect a more recent valuation of the acquirer's assets and liabilities. Because also we think that at consolidated level, that would provide some consistency in the information that is provided to users of the financial statement, of the consolidated financial statement. And also we would support that for practical ground, because we think that it's the easiest solution to apply in practice. And well, basically taking the book value in the consolidating entity, well, it's just the most readily available information, and basically would support that approach. But as I said, we appreciate the fact that there could be mixed use in that respect. In relation to question eight, in this case, we have a strong view, and I think that we would be definitely supportive of restating a pre-combination information. And we would support that for mainly two reasons. The fact that doing as if the combination had always existed, would, we think, provide more homogeneous information over time at consolidated level, and there would be, in other words, there would be no disruption in trends that some users, such as a creditor, would may appreciate. And the other reason is the fact that basically it's more practical in our view, because basically there is no specific need for specific closing at the acquisition date for the acquirer. And we have and we don't support the board preliminary views in that respect for a reason that is flagged in the discussion paper, because the discussion paper acknowledged the fact that the proposal is not really consistent with the approach that is retained elsewhere in the paper, but because basically you wanted to apply the book value because you wanted to avoid some specific situation. For instance,
applying IFRS 3 and identifying the acquirer and the acquiree, and avoiding the fact that basically you would get an information that would depend on the way the transaction is structured. So we do agree with those working assumptions, but I think that we think that you need to be consistent in this respect. And basically, if you require entity to take the book value on a prospective basis, you would end up by identifying the acquirer and the acquiree, and with all those difficulties that arising from the application of IFRS 3. So we would encourage you to be consistent in your approach in this respect. And that's all on my side for those questions.
Thank you. Linda?
Thank you, Sue. I'll be brief, just a couple of things. Generally speaking, on the acquisition method, we're supportive of what's in the discussion paper. Yeah, in our outreach so far, but we're continuing to follow up on this point. We've had some individuals raise concern about how impairments resulting from a BCUCC transaction could be recorded if the impairment is subject to goodwill created from a BCUCC. So we're going to follow up on that and see how pervasive that issue is. So more to come on that. Moving to the book value method, we have some concerns there. First of all, we disagree with the notion of using the book values reported by the transferred company in all cases. We think that at a minimum, there should be an option to provided to use the acquirer book values or the parent company book values, whichever are more relevant. We will note that in our jurisdiction, we care about consistency with U.S. GAAP, and if you are allowed to use the parent company book values, that would make it consistent with current U.S. GAAP. And another issue that's been raised to us is the notion of what if the acquiree book values that entity's not using IFRS and is using a different GAAP, which adds some complexity. We also, I think I mentioned early, we would like an option to restate comparatives given if the entity might be anticipating an IPO, et cetera, or if the comparative information has been requested by users to assess and trending of the combined businesses. So we think that at least an option would be provided. I think those are my comments that are most relevant.
Thank you. Iki?
Thank you, Sue. In response to the application of the acquisition method, most AOSSG members agree with or do not have strong views on the accounting treatment of the contribution or distribution as proposed in the discussion paper. They also agree with the proposal about the disclosures requirements. Only a few minorities suggested that the acquisition method in IFRS 3 should be applied without modification, or both contribution and distribution should be recognized in equity. As for the application of the book value method, some AOSSG members, or actually most AOSSG members, agree with the ISB preliminary views and rationales of measuring assets and liabilities received using the transferred company's book value. Having said that, they noted that there are practical challenges when the transfer companies does not prepare IFRS financial statements. And so they suggest the ISB provide guidance in this area, or actually allow the receiving company to use the controlling party's book value in this case. For the pre-combination information, as what the others have suggested, some AOSSG members actually disagree with the ISB preliminary views. They consider that the restated pre-combination information meets the information needs of users of financial statement, particularly for IPO cases. They think that the restated pre-combination information provide evidence of management track record of the listing group as a whole for investor to perform trend analysis, and also regulators in certain jurisdictions require restated pre-combination from IPO applicants. Also, they suggested that the presentation of pre-combination information under the ISB preliminary views would solely depend on how the BCUCC is legally structured, and this would result in different pre-combination information presented for economically similar transactions, which would in turn impair the comparability of financial statements. There are also questions about how to apply the ISB preliminary views to cases where it is economically unclear who the receiving company is, for example, in the case of merger of two equals. Thank you.
Thank you. Pauline?
I'll keep this brief as well, because in general we're supportive of what's being proposed. The area on the acquisition accounting, we are exploring the issue of goodwill and how that should be treated, and that's one of the questions we specifically asked in our comment letter. So we'll come back to you with more details once we've heard from our stakeholders on that. As far as book value accounting is concerned, we've got very much the same concerns that I think Linda was setting out for Canada, specifically the whether there's a need for an option to allow the use of parent value, parent company values, for all the reasons that have already been discussed, and also to allow an option for companies to restate pre-combination information on the basis that that's frequently required in regulatory transactions. But otherwise, as I said, we're very supportive of the proposals you're making.
Thank you. Nobu.
Yes, thank you, Sue. Although we don't support the use of the acquisition method, we do have concerns about the details in the proposals. Our preliminary view is that the accounting for underpayment in a BCECC as a contribution to equity is not representationally faithful, because it assumes that an arm's length transaction takes place after the contribution to equity, which is totally hypothetical and does not reflect the reality. In addition, we believe that determining the transaction price as if the transaction price were an arm's length transaction would be extremely difficult, if not impossible. Thank you.
Thanks, Nobu. You?
Okay, thank you, Sue. I would like to share our preliminary comments on question 4 to question 9. On the acquisition method, to be honest, that we agree that all the BCOCC should, we think the book value method should apply to all the BCOCC. However, on question 4, we generally agree with the ISB's proposal. People just have some concerns about the asymmetric accounting treatment for the contributions to equity and the distributions from equity. They hope the ISB could clarify it or make some improvement to make it consistent with each other. On question 5, our preliminary view is that it's more appropriate and reasonable to recognize underpayment as a contribution to equity, not as a gain on the bargain purchase. On question 6, we generally agree. Regarding the book value method, on question 7, we support the ultimate controlling party's book value should be used rather than the transferred company's book values. If the transferred company's book value are used, people may have some concerns about because it provides some room, or it would be quite easy for the entity to structure some transactions to manipulate the financial performance of the receiving party. A very quick example. For example, assume that company A is the ultimate controlling party. Company B is controlled by company A. A acquired company C from an external party. Assume that this acquisition is a business combination, not under common control. After that, A transferred C to the receiving party B under BCOCC. So this arrangement will leave the goodwill and the appreciation portion of the assets recognized in the external acquisition in the ultimate controlling party, that is A. And all this will not be reflected in Company B's financial statement. Subsequently, Company B could recognize a big amount of disposal gain by disposing Company C to another external party. That's just a very quick example. On question 8 and 9, we agree with others' proposal that we suggest to provide entities some options for presentation of pre-combination information. Two reasons. One, in practice, the Chinese security regulators currently require the IPO companies to restate the pre-combination information for BizUCC. The second reason, according to our outreach, restating the pre-combination information provides some useful information for the investors, for them to perform trade analysis. So we think this kind of information would be useful for investors. Therefore, we suggest options for this kind of information. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Raymond?
Thank you, Sue. Just on the acquisition method, we're in agreement with the trajectory that the board has taken on this, the staff have taken on this. We certainly agree that there isn't a gain in a bargain purchase, and I think that should not be feature in whatever documents are finally put forward. And when it comes to the information that's provided around the disclosures, we agree with what's proposed at the moment. Picking up on what is sitting in IFRS 3, it is necessary for people to understand what has happened. So I think on that basis, we feel that the disclosures that IFRS 3 requires at the moment would simply go some way to allowing that position to be properly understood. When it comes to the book value method, I think a little bit different from what has been proposed by either speakers at this point in time, around I guess the issues around the combination date and going back to prior years and restating the comparators. Our view has been, if the disclosures that are provided in the financial statements explain what has happened, that there should be no need for a comparative, for the comparators to be restated. So then maybe we just have a think about that and see what that might potentially do. I appreciate what's been said about we need the comparability, especially where the business that is affected by this reorganization is ultimately going to find itself in the listed space, as an example. So that may be an important piece of information to have in place to enable that analysis from one year to the next. But at the same time, if the disclosures are provided in the financial statements, that could be another way of getting around that. So and something else that also comes out of the application of the book value method, it's not always going to be appropriate to measure, to use the book values of the transferred company. I guess an example that came up as part of our conversations was if an entity has been bought into a group of companies, and then there's a further reorganization coming out of that, then which values are you using? Do you go back to the original purchase, the original carrying values in the company, when, you know, whatever it accounted for in its books initially? If you're going back that far, then you may find yourself in a situation where the numbers that you're using or that you're reporting on bear no resemblance whatsoever with what has been paid for, you know, the basis on which the values, you know, the companies have changed hands when the acquisitions have occurred subsequent to that. So I think that's another thing we just need to be careful about. Something else that we've got on here, on the information that should be provided in the financial statements, I guess what we're concerned about is, do we have enough context that is provided in the disclosures that are provided in the financial statements, to the extent that there's enough context that is provided, then I think it will then make the understanding of those financial statements that much easier, and we'll be comfortable with it. I think that's it from my end. Thank you.
Thank you. Leonardo.
Thank you, Zoom. I will be very, very quick on question five, six, question four, five, and six. We agree with the ISB proposal. On question seven, we had different view on this point, as mentioned also by other members, because some of our stakeholders would prefer using the controlling parties' values, especially when the business combination of common control is made after a real acquisition. On the other question, so far we agree with the ISB proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Leonardo. Just from my side, listening to that conversation, again, I think an interesting range of views. Thank you very much for sharing. And again, I think pretty consistent with what we've been hearing in the outreach so far, which is comforting. Just a couple of observations from my side. I think, again, there were a few points that were raised where I'd encourage the staff to go back to people to follow up on questions raised, unless you have anything you want to mention now. And just a couple of things I just wanted to comment on, where for me personally, it would be interesting for me to understand when you write your comment letters, some of the points that you were raising. I'm going to focus in particular on this point about pre-combination information, because it was quite a discussion at the board table at the time. And you guys have raised some interesting points. What I think would be very interesting for us to understand in the comment letters is, for those who think that there should be pre-combination information provided in comparatives, how you think about that differently to the receiving entity just making a third-party acquisition, given that the focus is on the receiving entity, which is gaining control over something they didn't have before. And I think it might be useful also to think about situations where there's a pre-IPO and where there isn't, because I think the IPO situation could be a slightly different thinking. And a few people have made the suggestion that there should at least be an option for there to be restatement of pre-combination information. We had tried to deal with it, I think, slightly differently by proposing disclosure of that information if it was thought to be relevant or material for investors. I guess just when you write to us, it would be good to know your thoughts on whether investors would be well served from a comparability perspective if there was a choice about something so important as what you would see in the comparative information. And that would be something I personally would be interested to see in the comment letters. Yorna or Richard, did you have anything that you wanted to cover that we haven't addressed before we wrap this section up?
No, not for me. Thank you, everybody.
Not from me either. Thank you very much for your comments and questions, and we look forward to your comment letters and also our future outreach activities. We still have a few things in the pipeline, so we're very much looking forward to that.
Excellent. With that, we're just a couple of minutes ahead of schedule, so I suggest that we stick to the timetable. Hans will be back. He is back, but he'll be back to chair the next session, and we'll start that at 12:45 UK time. So we'll see you just over 15 minutes. Thank you.